Everybody's in a tizzy. I wonder why. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Barry, it's a great Saturday to be with you, as always, here with the folks on WLRY. We're really happy to share our analytical skills and try to teach the folks how to use their own built-in analytical skills, and it's really great to be able to do that with you here today.
Well, it's always a lot of fun when we get a chance to do all this, Chuck. One of the things that we want to look at is something we've talked about for a while now, at least over a week. It's been almost 2 weeks since the shooting happened at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. And that particular incident has been the stepping off point for a large number of discussions of, Chuck, numerous issues, whether it be sanctity of human life, whether it be our Second Amendment rights and freedoms, whether it be our First Amendment rights. These things are all intertwined and all come to a head when you look at them in the light of the Constitution of the United States. That's what we're going to try to do. We're going to analyze some of the things that are going on, some of the things that our listeners are hearing, seeing in the media, or maybe even not seeing, because you and I kind of dig a little deep and try to find these little nuggets and jewels that are strewn throughout the landscape and put them together to show the mosaic that is formed when you put all these disparate pieces in the proper order and in the proper context. But I think the biggest thing, Chuck, is that we might actually have a national media figure going to jail over the issue of gun control. Now,
let's hope so. This would teach him a lesson, and it would be, I'll be quite honest, this is the height of irony. Irony is almost impossible to define, but you can see it in certain things. And this is one of those things that demonstrates irony by being so ironic, it's funny.
Well, and what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, and for those of you who haven't heard yet, is that last week on Sunday, NBC News anchor of Meet the Press, David Gregory, did something that got him in hot water with the Washington, D.C. law enforcement agencies there. You see, they were focusing in on the same topic, on the topic of guns and gun rights and gun control. And David Gregory was interviewing National Rifle Association CEO Wayne LaPierre. Now, Chuck, we can get into this in a little bit, but I have some issues with LaPierre and NRA on some of the positions they've taken, especially in regard to this, because, again, we're going to look at that constitution where these things are not constitutional that they're advocating for. But the first and foremost is David Gregory decided he needed to use a prop, Charles. Sometimes we use a prop, too. We call it actually getting somebody on here who knows what they're talking about. But David Gregory decided he needed to use a prop to make his point with Wayne LaPierre as he was trying to berate him over pro-gun rights advocates' positions that passing laws at either the federal, state, or municipal level to restrict the individual right to keep and bear arms, the Second Amendment, and the accessories that allow those arms to be functioning is ridiculous, and it's a violation of the constitutional liberties that we have under law. And so what he did, though, for those of you who didn't know, is as he's talking about this whole issue, he shows and holds up in his hand, and they tape this in studio. So here he is in studio in front of all the national cameras, and he's holding a banana clip, Chuck. You know, and I'm not talking about something that a girl would use in her hair to hold up her ponytail. I'm talking about a high-capacity magazine to hold bullets or cartridges for a firearm. This one supposedly appeared to be a 30-round magazine. Now, the big problem, and he goes, now, here's a magazine for ammunition that carries 30 bullets, he said, as he held aloft the magazine. He says, Now, isn't it possible that if we got rid of these, if we replaced them and said, well, you can only have a magazine that carries 5 bullets or 10 bullets, isn't it just possible that we can reduce the carnage in a situation like Newtown? So he was trying to pin Wayne LaPierre down that we need to have restrictions on magazine sizes for firearms in order to keep people from killing people as much. Well, Chuck, the big problem with this, well, there's twofold problems. So actually, more, there's threefold problems. The size of the magazine really doesn't matter, because if someone's really intent on causing a great deal of harm to someone else through the use of a firearm, and they have access, well, okay, let's say we limit a 30-round clip to a 10-round clip. I've seen people who will take those 10-round clips and tape them butt-end to butt-end, or, you know, or overlapping, tape them together so that they can clip it in, shoot 10 rounds, and then flip it over and clip the other side in and shoot another 10 rounds without barely breaking a sweat.
Oh, God. I've seen all kinds of different variations.
Oh, yeah, that's an old jungle trick. Or fixing a magazine so that you can have a fast reload, etc. You know, there's all kinds of things. What would keep a person, if they're really intent, from just buying 5 or 6 or 7 10-round magazines and having them on their person so they pop one out, pop another one in, and keep firing? The magazine size really isn't going to change things all that much. And the big thing is, Chuck, and I think you pointed this out, was that the magazine itself doesn't do anything but hold a cartridge.
It's a storage unit.
It's a storage unit, and without the actual machine, the tool, the firearm itself that the magazine is received into, nothing's going to happen.
Well, Barry, the way this film goes, I mean, here's what we'll do. I'll dig up there's copies of it out every place. We'll embed it in the posting on our website, www.principledpolicy.com. So if you want to hear the archive of the show and see some of the videos that we're going to allow you to see by embedding them into this video, this will be a big posting, by the way. But that being said, Gregory sort of waves it like a bloody shirt. If we were to ban this, wouldn't this have lowered the death tolls? Couldn't we stop these things? Well, the answer to that is no. All you would do, basically, is reduce the number of bullets that someone would be able to store. And the fact is, as you pointed out, if somebody really wanted to get the job done, they'd do it with 5-round clips if they really had to. All you do is carry a backpack. Yeah, or have a big fanny pack with clips in it. The fact is, this would stop nothing. It would just mean that they'd have to stop momentarily to reload, and frankly, rushing someone who is doing that while they're reloading is not a viable scenario. It has been done, but in places where liberals predominate, who hate guns and actually think that the gun itself is what does the killing, no one would rush that person as they reloaded. Now, you and I might think to do that.
And I think, and I would think better of it, too, in one sense, Chuck, because I'd have my gun with me and I wouldn't have to rush the fool.
That's the entire point, Barry. The fact is that Gregory waving this thing like the bloody shirt, that magazine, first of all, it had nothing in it. Second of all, it demonstrated exactly what we've been saying here. It is illegal in Washington, D.C. that the law reads this way. It prohibits possession, sale, or transfer of, quote, any large capacity ammunition feeding device, regardless of whether the device is attached to a firearm. Barry, a 30-round clip without a gun to fire the 30 rounds
is a nice paperweight.
It's a boat anchor. It can sit on top of your desk and do nothing. It is useless. And Gregory waving that thing around, he might as well have been waving a hammer. Because
if he tries to use that as a hammer, he might get a little surprised.
Well, an empty 30-round clip, even used as a hammer, is sort of a useless device. That's the entire irony of the whole situation. He's waving this thing. In the meantime, he's doing it in Washington, D.C. It's illegal to possess it.
Yeah, that's this exactly is, right. It's a $1,000 fine and up to a year in prison to even possess a 30-round magazine. And David Gregory, according to the reports that we've seen, NBC News asked the D.C. police, and they said, no, you can't do it. And he went ahead and did it anyway. And so right now he's being investigated by the D.C. law enforcement for violation of the gun control law.
Now, here's what the Reuters story, and again, Barry, you and I have talked about that Reuters has a definite bias against gun ownership, but here's what Reuters says. The network had contacted the police department prior to Sunday's broadcast inquiring, quote, if they could use a high-capacity magazine for the segment, end quote. Police spokesman Araz Alali said on Wednesday, quote, NBC was informed that possession of a high-capacity magazine was not permissible and their request was denied. So there's confirmation from the D.C. police. So what does Gregory do? He goes on the air. Now, why did Gregory feel safe on going on the air in possession of a quote-unquote dangerous weapon, a high-capacity magazine?
Well, I would assume that he might have taken a moment of lucidity to think, this thing can't hurt anybody without a gun attached to it.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. He knew that it was not a dangerous implement. It's sort of like having a shotgun with the receiver and the barrel off. What can you do with a shotgun with the barrel off?
Hurt yourself really badly if you pull the trigger.
Exactly. Hurt yourself. Well, he can't even hurt himself with that thing unless he hits himself in the head with it. And frankly, most 30-round magazines aren't even that heavy unless they got bullets in them. So he might make a mark on his head. If he hit himself with a sharp edge, he might put a cut in it. But the fact is, Gregory knew up front that the law is ridiculous. Therefore, he flouted it. That's the point here. Now, I'm sure he's saying to himself, we have attorneys, we have lawyers, and they can get me out of this. Well, I don't know if you heard this or not, but Gregory is suspended.
Oops.
You know, he's the meet the press. Not this week, he's not.
No, he will not be this week.
He's suspended. After the broadcast, this is from the article, which originated in Washington, a number of bloggers and websites questioned Gregory's actions and the legality of the gun clip. They're the only reason that Gregory is being investigated for this, let's not kid ourselves, is because a bunch of gun rights guys got out there and said, how come he can have one and have it in his office and I can't?
Exactly.
Now look, the D.C. gun laws, most of the D.C. gun laws were recently struck down. They were absurd. You basically could own a shotgun if it was in pieces. You could own a handgun if you went through this long, arduous permitting process. And most people didn't make it through the process. You had to be unloaded and all this other garbage. Well, Barry, an unloaded gun is useless. I mean, you might be able to hit somebody in the head with it if you can get close enough to them. In the meantime, they're going to shoot you because they don't care about the law. And, you know, David Gregory didn't care about the law. He knew it was ridiculous. Whether he admitted it or not, he knew up front it was a ridiculous law. That's the irony here.
Absolutely.
Of course, it's an absurd law. It's absolutely, I mean, if you think about it, it's absolutely absurd. And yet, he is suspended from his job. And the D.C. police are actually talking about fining him for owning a piece of metal that, under certain circumstances, could hold 30 rounds of ammunition if you actually owned the ammunition. Now, what's interesting about that, I don't know what the D.C. law says about owning the ammunition. Now, I looked at the clip. And honestly, it looked like either an AK-47 clip, although it looked too small to me. It looked like a .223 clip. So can you own .223M? I don't know. I honestly don't know. So here he is with a clip to do nothing. Now, there's some other absurdities tied up with this, Barry, and I have to laugh about these. We've got Piers Morgan.
Uh-huh.
Who we talked about abusing our friend Larry Pratt on the air. Called him an idiot, said he was one of the stupidest men he'd ever met, blah, 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 blah. Well, gun owners don't take kindly this kind of language, especially from someone who's a foreigner. And Piers Morgan is kind of just the sort of arrogant, he's almost a caricature of what people often think of British upper crust being. Now, I'm not claiming Morgan is an upper cruster, but sort of looks down their nose at the people from the colonies and how silly they are, forgetting that we ran them out of the place twice in 1783 and then again in 1815. We sort of ran them off. The person who made that possible, and a lot of Brits still try to make fun of this, but the person who made it possible was the private gun owner who showed up and did his militia service. Yeah, did we take it on the chin on a couple of battles? Yeah, they burned Washington. And gosh, Barry, you know, maybe we could bribe them to come back and invade and burn Washington again. We might be in better shape.
Yeah, but, no doubt.
Like Piers Morgan, who do this. So what happens? You know, the White House has sort of painted itself into a corner with this petitioning process. They have this online petitioning service. And what you can do is you can create a petition at whitehouse.gov. And once that petition gets a certain number of signatures, and I forget what the threshold is, Barry, do you remember? Is it 25,000?
25,000.
Once there is, this petition has 25,000 signatures on it, the White House is required, under the rules they set up for this thing, they're required to have a response. Well, the last time I checked, there was a petition to deport Piers Morgan, who is not a citizen of the United States, because he is hiding behind the First Amendment to attack the Second Amendment. In other words, he's coming out against the Bill of Rights, and there were over 78,000 signatures on this petition. Throw Piers Morgan out of the United States. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday night. So who knows? By this weekend, there may be over 100,000. So the White House has painted itself into a corner. And, of course, you know what the response is going to be. Well, we have immigration laws, and Mr. Morgan has not done anything to violate any laws. And, frankly, I agree with that. Should the guy be deported? No, probably not. But I thought about signing it just, again, to add to the irony. You know, we've talked about some of these White House petitions and that they're kind of a waste of time. But it would still be fun to put your name on the thing, on this one. But the fact is that what Morgan is doing is the height of irony. And I have seen posters who are defending him. How dare you say that this man doesn't have First Amendment rights, all this stuff about the First Amendment. And I'm saying, you know, do you not see the irony of the fact that he is hiding behind the First Amendment in order to attack the Second Amendment?
Well, exactly. And Chuck, we all know what the subtle irony about this whole issue is that in order for him to stand behind the First Amendment, you need to have the Second Amendment in place in order to defend your right. Or as George Washington called the Second Amendment, or the possession of guns by the populace, is their liberty teeth. Washington's quote was that the liberty teeth, or gun, the private possession of firearms, is the securest form of your liberty and keeping them from being trampled on by government.
And that's the bottom line here, Barry. Without the Second Amendment, the rest of them are meaningless because the government will manipulate them at will and claim that they say things that they don't say. And how do we know this? Because that's what they're doing now. The government believes, the federal government believes it has the upper hand, is basically ignoring state sovereignty as it is laid out in the Constitution. It's ignoring the Fourth Amendment. It's ignoring the Fifth Amendment. It most of the time ignores the First Amendment. The whole idea of web neutrality is an attempt to negate the First Amendment. Web neutrality, as it was originally designed, would have shut down voices like ours.
Oh, absolutely.
And voices like Larry Pratt's, and voices like name a conservative radio outlet, Rush Limbaugh. What would happen is that, let's say you've got a local radio show who hosts Limbaugh and Hannity. Two guys that I really could live without, but then again, you know, Limbaugh was the only conservative voice for years, and I remember what it was like before him. The only talkers on the radio were guys like Larry King. I mean, ultra far left. So, what would happen? Well, those local radio outlets would be required not only to give, quote-unquote, equal time to talkers like, oh gosh, let's think of some of the people who are on Air America. Randy Rhodes, who I'm aware of because my mother worked at a radio station with her. My mom used to be a radio producer in the old days when there was local radio, which there isn't much anymore. But my mom worked with Randy Rhodes, who she said was as insufferable on the air as she was in person. People like, well, if you remember, Al Franken had an Air America radio program. People like Janine Garofalo, they would not only be required to make airtime available, in some cases they would be required to provide it for free.
That's right.
In order to balance, quote unquote, balance out the message being broadcast by the radio station. Now, here are the facts, Barry. A radio station, in most cases, unless it's an NPR station, and good luck getting balance on an NPR station. But most stations, unless they're NPR, are privately owned. That means that basically the company that owns it has the right to broadcast the political viewpoint of its choice. Now, there is a requirement that radio stations are involved in public service and that kind of thing. That used to be the reason why on Sunday mornings, most radio stations broadcast religious services. You remember that back in the 80s?
Yes, I do remember that.
In the 80s, that all passed away. That was their public service. They would broadcast a series of religious programs, and that sort of did their public service for the... They always run the emergency broadcast system and that kind of stuff. Sometimes they'll run the president's address and, you know, the response, the conservative response and all that stuff. But the fact is, what these guys would like to do is just simply wipe out the Bill of Rights. The 9th and 10th are gone. The 2nd they would like to get rid of, because the 2nd is the only reason why anyone is still talking in terms of the 9th and 10th and the 4th and the 5th. And actually the 6th, 7th, and 8th, while we're at it, because those all have to do with the jurisprudence and the rights that you have in a court of law. But the fact is, we can see, this is not idle speculation on our part, Barry.
No, it's not.
We now have congressmen who are out there admitting as much. And what they are doing in so doing, in the same interviews, is admitting up front that what they want to do is, without actually saying so, they're using murders in Newtown, Connecticut, and other places in order to seize and make illegal high-capacity magazines. And in fact, really what they would like to do is put a ban on the ownership of guns like an AR-15, an SKS, an AK-47. You know, AK-47 seems to get a bad rap. The AK-47 fires the same round as the SKS, but almost nobody says anything about it. I've never quite understood that. I guess an AK-47 is more recognizable because it's very military looking, and it shows up a lot on TV shows where everybody wants to shoot everything up. They use an AK-47. Now, of course, they're always automatics. Well, the AK-47 you can buy at the local store or at the gun store is a semi-automatic. One trigger pull, one bullet. But of course, they're always automatic on TV. That being said, again, this is so ironic, Barry, what's going on here. Because these guys, like, well, let's talk about Representative Gerald Nadler from New York, who's basically coming out and saying only the government should have high-capacity magazines and high-powered rifles. And when you ask him why, what's his reply? Only the state ought to have a monopoly on, quote-unquote, legitimate violence.
Now, Chuck, I don't know about you, but that little phrase right there kind of sends icicles through my veins. The state ought to have a monopoly on legitimate violence. Well, this is a careful exposition of defining your terms. Well, I can't think we can all figure out what he means by the state. He means the federal government. Monopoly, well, we pretty much know that. That means they're the only ones who have it. But he didn't say on firearms. He didn't say on Second Amendment rights. He said legitimate. And what makes it legitimate, Charles? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Who legitimizes this? Violence.
That is the real question. What makes it legitimate? Well, the answer is might makes right.
Which has been a constant theme of tyrants throughout history.
Exactly. And Nadler basically says anybody who believes that they're going to come out with their machine guns and shoot at tyrants in the government is insane. I'm sorry, but that is the exact reason why we have a Second Amendment. The founding fathers foresaw the day when a tyrant, having just come through the American Revolution where a tyrant attempted to seize their arms. This is what we talk about when we say in 1775 the British tried to get us to change our gun laws. George III attempted to make it impossible for the colonists to have to own private arms, knowing full well that it was absolutely necessary for the defense of the people against the British Army. Now, let's not kid ourselves. Did militias totally win the day in the Revolutionary War?
No. Well, no, there were many instances where the militias broke and fled the battlefield.
But let me ask you.
But there are also many instances when they didn't.
That's right. Now, let me ask you a question. Where did the Continentals come from?
The Continental Army?
Yeah.
They came from the state militias.
That's right. They were militia conscripts.
Because if you look in the Constitution, it's interesting that you're bringing this up, Chuck, because we had this conversation last week in my Institute on the Constitution class, where I took them through and did sentence diagramming of the Second Amendment. And as we mentioned in that class, and we mentioned on here every once in a while, that the founders, the rules of grammar were a little different back in 1787 than they are today. And when the founders wanted to emphasize something or point out something that had a specific definition, they capitalized the word. And the word militia in the Second Amendment is capitalized. It says a well-regulated militia. But then when you go to the Noah Webster 1828 Dictionary of the English Language, which are the definitions that were accepted during that time frame, because Noah Webster was a contemporary of the founders. He was one of the founding fathers. And the definitions that were in use at the time when they wrote this document are the definitions that Noah Webster used in his 1828 dictionary. And if you look at militia, it is any able-bodied citizen able to bear a firearm or a stand of arms, which included a musket, a sword, a cartridge box and cartridges. And so each able-bodied citizen was expected to keep those things. Now, the sword wasn't necessary for everybody because they knew that there are a lot of people who couldn't afford a good sword, but they all had to have a musket, a cartridge box and cartridges and the equipment to utilize it, which also meant gunpowder, etc. And they expected every able-bodied citizen who could bear arms to be ready to bear arms in the defense of their communities. That was what the militia was. It wasn't a trained, professional, governmentally funded crack force of troops. It was average citizens who came together in the defense of their country.
And what's interesting about that, we won't go too far into this because we could spend days on this, but the fact is, the states continued to pay the Continentals. In other words, a lot of them were Massachusetts conscripts, and the states continued to pay them, or really not pay them, which is one of the reasons we have the modern Constitution, was because of some of the shenanigans that went on with payment. Basically, Continentals were paid in very often in state bonds, which were at the time relatively worthless.
That's right.
And a lot of these guys were away from their families for 7 or 8 years, away from their farms, fought the entire war, and got stuck with these bonds. And very often they sold them at 5 or 10% of the face value in order to get money to send back to their families. And they sold them to speculators who at the end of the war demanded that they be paid at face value, even though the currency had been grossly, grossly inflated.
Oh, absolutely.
During the war. So these guys wanted payment of these grossly inflated bonds at face value in the recovered currency after the war. And that really, if you've ever heard of Shays' Rebellion, which is the reason why we have the Constitution and had the Constitutional Convention, that's a big part of the story. You don't hear that very much, but that's what Shays' Rebellion was all about. And by the way, that was an uprising of the state militia, who was very unhappy with what was going on in the Massachusetts government. And the Massachusetts government was actually forced to hire mercenaries from other states to come in to put down the rebellion of its militia during Shays' Rebellion. A lot of people don't know that either. The army was essentially a private army that put down that revolt. So don't kid yourselves but the fact is that's the whole point of the militia. That's the whole point of a well-regulated militia. Now, the word regulated, that's what seems to trip a lot of people up. Regulated basically means trained.
Trained. It means trained. That's right.
So this idea that the federal government can step in and enforce this and force that. No, they can force training. They can basically impose training regulations on the states.
Yeah, well, basically what you're looking at is Article 1, Section 8. And this is what the Congress can do. They can provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That's it. Those are the only three things you can call the militia up for, according to the Constitution. Now, Chuck, is anywhere does that say you can call up the militia and send them to Afghanistan or to Iraq or into the Bering Sea or any place else?
Well,
no, it says execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, which is internal, and repel invasions, which is a foreign country trying to invade you.
Well, there's a second limit there in Article 1, and that is that you can only call up, you can only do military requisitions for 2 years.
That's right. It's to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So,
there's a limit in there on standing armies, which unfortunately we have now ignored. We now have a standing army. Even the National Guard is really federal troops under state control. They're paid by the federal government.
And that's unconstitutional. Because this is what the Congress is, and I want to go back again. We need to go back to our Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 continues and says that the Congress shall have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, and read what there are, you know, executing the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, repel invasions, reserving to the states, respectively, the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So in other words, the Congress spells out, so this is how you train them, but the officers are appointed by the state, not by Congress, not by the federal government, because these are state, the militia are state defense forces. And so that state can choose their own officers for their body of troops. And they will train them and discipline them. Basically, the army, the Congress can organize, arm them, and prescribe the discipline. That's it.
That's it. And that's the bottom line. Now, I'm busy looking up some statistics because we're going to, I think we should run this. People need to hear Gerald Nadler say these things.
Oh, well, absolutely. I want to go back to that because, again, this is Nadler saying that the states ought to have, and he's not talking about the state of Rhode Island or the state of Wisconsin or the state of New York. He's talking about the central government. That's what he means by the state, that the federal government, they're the, as the only ones who should have, quote, high capacity gun magazines, and that the state ought to have a monopoly on legitimate violence. And he said this, Chuck, in a Capitol Hill press conference. Now, this happened last week, but you didn't hear very much reported about this in the mainstream media. And as a matter of fact, it was our good friends over at CNSnews.com who actually posted up that we found so that we could bring it to our listeners today. And I believe you said we do have an, well, it would be an audio. It's a video clip, which we'll post up on principledpolicy.com along with this today's program. But we're going to play the audio portion of that so that you can hear it for yourself coming from the mouth of a sitting United States congressperson who all but basically says the central government should have the guns and nobody else.
And here we go.
Would banning high-capacity clips at Fort Hood have prevented Major Nadal Hassan from killing 13 people and wounding 29 others?
I don't know. It might have. Certainly he was on a military base, and he may or may not have had authority to use military weapons. I don't know whether he did or not. But the point of all this is not that we can prevent every single murder, we can prevent every single mass murder, but we can reduce it greatly. You know, no one would say that we shouldn't use penicillin because some people still die of infections. But a lot fewer do because we have penicillin and other ones addressed. Now, the fact of the matter is that Germany has 150 or so people killed a year with guns. Canada, 170. The United States, 9 to 10,000 a year. We have a murder rate with guns that are 15 to 20 times higher than any other industrial country. There's only one explanation, and that's the availability, the easy availability of assault weapons and of high-capacity clips. Now, last Friday, we lost 20 children and 6 adults murdered in a Connecticut school. Last Friday, a madman attacked a school in China. An elementary school in China. 22 kids were injured, but none killed, because he had a knife, not an assault rifle. That's the difference.
But if a bill was brought up and passed to ban high-capacity clips, would the military still be allowed to use them?
Of course the military would be allowed to.
So only the government, so the American people, only the government would be allowed to have high-capacity clips?
Yes. Well, I think the legislation doesn't ban existing ones, but although I'd like to do that too, but I think the legislation we're talking about would prohibit the sale, or probably manufacture a sale of high-capacity clips in the future. Not those that are in private possession today. But let me say, yes, one of the definitions of a nation state is that the state has a monopoly on legitimate violence. And the state ought to have a monopoly on legitimate violence. If the premise of your question is that people are going to resist a tyrannical government by shooting machine guns at American troops, that's insane.
There you have
well,
it, folks.
Yes, Chuck, there is something that's insane about that, but it's what's coming out of Jerry Nadler's lips. in this situation. I mean, first of all, and I want to break this down a little bit, okay? He says that the point of all this is not that we can prevent every single murder or we can prevent every single mass murder, okay? So this purpose of wanting gun control and getting rid of assault weapons and high-capacity clips, but we can reduce it greatly. Now, he says, you know, no one will say we shouldn't use penicillin because some people still die of infections. Chuck, he just made the point that gun rights advocates have been making all this time. The gun is the penicillin. The infection is criminals who go into gun-free zones and decide they're going to kill large numbers of people, like they talked about Nidal Hassan, Adam Lanza, all of these others who go into GFZs and start shooting up place or attacking people. Guess what, Jerry? That gun, that quote-unquote assault weapon you're talking about in the hands of a private citizen, and whether or not the clip is high-capacity or not, is the penicillin that keeps the infection from killing as many people. But he's using it, he goes, but a lot fewer die of infections because we have penicillin and other wonder drugs. He's actually flipped his own case around on its head, Chuck, and he's making our case for us.
Exactly.
Which I think is absolutely hilarious, because usually when you stick a microphone in front of an elected official and you let them go on long enough, pretty soon they make your case for you by talking crazy talk.
Well, Barry, and that part at the end there about not firing at United States soldiers. Okay, that makes a lot of, there's a lot of presuppositional baggage in that statement.
Oh, very much so. And what he said, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who were listening to it but didn't catch it, he said, quote, if the premise of your question, talking to the reporter from CNS News, if the premise of your question is that people are going to resist a tyrannical government by shooting machine guns at American troops, that's insane. Okay, yeah, Chuck, you're right. He just gave us a window into his own way of thinking. He truly believes that if you allow citizens, those are the, you know, his constituents, those are the people who put him and others like him in office, if you allow them access to firearms, they're going to open fire on American troops. Well, Chuck, why would they do that? I mean, after all, aren't American troops here to defend our rights and our freedoms? I guess the only time you ever take up a gun against somebody defending you is if they stopped defending you and started attacking you.
And that's the entire point. What he's saying is, we want the power to do what we will, and it's insane of you to think that you're going to be able to defend yourself against us.
And that's exactly what he's saying.
He is creating an us versus them, an us versus you scenario. And we're on this side of the barricade, you're on the other side of the barricade. It is creating a two-class society. The ruling class and those who are being ruled. And those who are being ruled have no right to defend themselves against the ruling class. Well, Barry, that's not what I signed up for.
Well, I don't think it's what anybody signed up for, Chuck. You know, he's sitting here and he's trying to make these cases, and Nadler's just basically spinning it out here and saying, well, you know, we're going to ban high-capacity clips, but the military gets them. Oh, well, of course the military gets those clips, because they're the ones who are going to have to basically control the population when we take their guns away from them. And he's like, he goes even farther. Again, this is what you call one of those Freudian slips, but I don't even call it that. I just call it opening a window into the soul of Jerry Nadler. And he says, well, the legislation, and what he's talking about is a proposal that's been put forward by Carolyn McCarthy, who is the Democrat rep from New York, and Diana DeGette, who's a Democrat from Colorado, that would ban magazines for firearms that carry more than 10 rounds of ammunition. It also prohibits the transfer, possession, or importation of those magazines that are manufactured after the date of the law being signed. So in other words, it has a grandfather clause, but says you can't even possess them after, if they're manufactured after the date of the bill signing. Now, he says here that this bill, he goes, well, I think the legislation doesn't ban existing ones. And he's right, it's a grandfather clause. But, and then he throws it in there, Chuck, even almost as an afterthought. Although I would like to do that too. So what he's saying is he wants to take away legally possessed equipment from the American public. He wants it to be an ex post facto law that we're going to ban these, and we're going to ban them so badly that if you already possess them legally, you're now in violation of the law because we've now made it a crime to possess them.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you know who Caroline McCarthy is? Carolyn McCarthy.
Yeah, I believe, wasn't she the one? It was that her husband got shot on the subway.
There was a madman.
Yes.
Another guy who went nuts in a gun-free zone on a train from Long Island into New York.
Oh, it was a train, yes. I thought it was the subway, but you're right, it was a train.
It was on a commuter train, and he went nuts, and I think he shot, I don't know, 17 people. And, of course, Carolyn McCarthy has been pushing. She really believes that her husband would not have been shot had guns been banned. Well, guns are banned in New York.
Yes, they are.
Let's not kid ourselves. New York City, it's illegal to own a gun. And, in fact, in Connecticut, it's essentially illegal to own a gun. You have to jump through hoops to be able to own a gun. So the fact is, Carolyn McCarthy is not smart enough to realize that her entire argument simply does not work. The fact is, if two people had been armed on that train, that guy never would have been able to do that.
That's correct.
He might have gotten off a few shots. He wouldn't have been able to empty like three clips, I think he emptied, from, if I remember right, a Glock. So this whole thing about this guy on the New York subway, the guy in the theater in Lakewood, Colorado, these guys didn't care about how many magazines they had to carry. This whole argument is so bogus, and what it is really, Barry, it's a stair-step approach.
Yes, it is.
First, we get rid of the 30-round magazines, and we limit it to 10. Then when somebody uses a 10-round magazine, we limit the 10-round magazines and limit it to 5. Then we limit it to guns that can only take single shots. Then suddenly we limit it to, we're sorry, you can only have muzzle loaders or, you know, antique guns. And then the next thing, they have to have the firing pins pulled. This is incrementalism. And Nadler has said, following last week's shooting, this is from the article we're going to post from CNSnews.com. Nadler called the National Rifle Association, quote, enablers of mass murder. No, Barry, that is the people that pass gun-free zone laws.
Oh, like Jerry Nadler. Yes,
exactly. And this is what Piers Morgan, and of course he told this to Piers Morgan, so uh-huh. Big shot.
Well, bring us back. And speaking of Piers Morgan, Chuck, I have been keeping track while we've been recording this today, and since we started recording, there have been nearly 1,000 new signatures added to the deport Piers Morgan back to Britain petition at We the People at the White House.
Well, let's see what else Nadler told our friend Pierce. Quote, we have a lobby, the leadership of the NRA, who functions as enablers of mass murder, Nadler told CNN host Pierce Morgan. And that's what they are. They're enablers of mass murder because they terrify the class of political people. And even though polling shows that most NRA members would support reasonable, I love that word, gun controls, every time someone proposes it, they come in. They lie. They say, we will take your guns away, he said, and they stop any kind of legislation to prevent that.
Yes, they stop any kind of legislation. Well, they don't really, because they've signed off on a number of pieces of legislation that did incrementally start taking away gun rights. And if somebody wants to argue with me about that, bring it on, because I can go back and show you where they did it.
Yeah, why I'm with Larry Pratt and Gun Owners of America, not with NRA.
Well, I got into Chuck, it's interesting you brought this one up, and I know you and I didn't talk about this ahead of time, but I got into a little back and forth on Facebook the other day about this very thing, about NRA and Wayne LaPierre and his comment about wanting to put armed law enforcement officers in every school in the country and wanting the Congress to pass a law to do it. And, of course, immediately the hue and cry from certain folks was, oh, it's wonderful, and aren't they doing great? But what I came up with was, no, you know what? That's really kind of dangerous. That's not where we want to go to with this. The Constitution doesn't allow it. And it's like, then there was the backtrack. Oh, well, I didn't say that. Yeah, I'm against them putting federal military in the schools. And I'm like, well, no. I said, first of all, the only people the federal government can train are the militia or the army. They have no right to propose to pay for and train other citizens in how to handle firearms or qualify them, as we talked about, like State Attorney General Mike DeWine trying to do with saying, well, we need to have like maybe former law enforcement or former military that go through our state training and then we put them in the schools. Well, the federal government has no constitutional authority to do that whatsoever, but some of these posters were saying, oh, wouldn't it be great? Well, it's okay, because, you know, I think there should be a federal role in education.
I can about guess who this was.
No, actually, it was somebody who had posted up as a friend of a friend on Facebook, and okay. I've never heard of the person before, and it was interesting, to say the least, that we had an interesting roundabout. But at the end, I basically just said, please, if you would, show me the article and section in the Constitution that allows for either the Congress to authorize law enforcement or federal military to be stationed in the schools and where they're allowed to train private citizens with using federal tax dollars. The silence was deafening, Charles.
Of course, because there is no place. Look, it's bad enough that we have to send our kids to schools by law to be propagandized. In fact, Barry, I can tell you that I graduated in 1975. I studied the Constitution in a class in high school. My book actually said that the Second Amendment did not guarantee the right for an individual to own a weapon. I mean, it wasn't subtle. It was right there in the Bill of Rights. It explained everything. It says this allows the states to maintain National Guard troops, not for the individual to own a weapon. This is the kind of thing that's been going on, and that book was at least 10 years old. And I know that because I saw people who it was signed out to before me. Barry, this kind of stuff, we sit around and we think, oh gosh, the government is going to save us. They're going to train people to guard schools. That's not the job of the Army. You know, you remember during the Clinton era, what was the Army being used for? They were delivering food in Haiti. That's not the job of the Army. That's the job for the Red Cross. That's the job for church charitable organizations and mission groups. The United States Army is not a pizza delivery service.
No, it's not.
And it's not a school crossing guard service.
And neither are the state militias, according to the Constitution.
That's right. Whose job is it? It's the local school board's job to decide if they need protection to provide an armed guard, not to have some guy who's in there with his gun locked up in a locker that he has to go run and get if somebody shows up and starts blasting. This is the, again, Nadler's statements are full of irony, but this stuff is blatant absurdity.
Yes, it is.
Now, let's take a look. I want to go back to Nadler's statement here in the last part of this when he said they lie. Listen closely to what he says. He's saying this about the NRA. They lie. They say they will take your guns away. They, meaning us, the Congress. This is Gerald Nadler, a member of Congress. They say they will take your guns away, he said, and they stop any kind of legislation to prevent that. What legislation to prevent that? That's the entire point. Nadler and company and Carolyn McCarthy and Diana DeGette and Chuck Schumer and a whole slew of other members of Congress do want to take your gun away. And they almost got away with it with the assault weapons ban and the magazine ban in the mid-1990s. And Barry, what happened? Violence with assault weapons and large magazines immediately went up.
Well, of course it did. Of course.
And the answer is obvious. Look, these guys, he's quoting bogus statistics here. He's talking about these thousands and thousands of murders that are committed in the 9 or 10,000 a year in the United States. Do you realize that about 57% of those quote unquote murders that are committed in the United States are suicides?
Yes, that's the devil in the details. Nadler's throwing these comments out, but he's not sourcing them at all.
No. And the fact is that most people don't put an assault rifle in their, well, nobody does, unless they're in the Army, because that's the only people basically who can own one unless you've got a federal stamp.
Exactly.
But nobody put, very few people put an AR-15 in their mouth. They put a pistol in their mouth. Or they'll shoot themselves with a shotgun.
That's right. And that's usually more often than not what the weapon of choice is. So. But, you know, it's interesting here, Chuck, and I want to bring this because I know we're getting close to the end of our hour here, but it was the thing that bothers me the most about Jerry Nadler and his entire comment and his colleagues around him who share the same philosophy is that when he starts making up definitions, he says, one of the definitions of a nation state, that's the reason why he uses the term state, ladies and gentlemen, I know he's talking about the federal central government. He's not talking about the state of Ohio or the state of West Virginia or the state of Kentucky. One of the definitions of a nation state is that the state has a monopoly on legitimate violence, and the state ought to have a monopoly on legitimate violence. When there was no king in Israel, Chuck, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So I guess legitimate Jerry Nadler, without the context of the rule of law as put forward by our founding fathers in our Constitution, which limits and enumerates the powers that he and his fellow colleagues can dutifully and legally exercise, is that they just want to make sure that everybody is subservient to them. Or as he said, as he talked to Piers Morgan, that the NRA terrifies the, quote, class of political people, unquote. He considers them to be a class above and beyond the regular citizen. Now, I got news for Jerry Nadler. You put your pants on one leg at a time, just like the rest of us. And you know what the sad part is, Chuck? He's drawing a paycheck that we're paying for.
And what's really sad about that is people keep sending him back to Congress.
Well, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing you've always done in the same way you've always done it and expecting a different result. Perhaps maybe it's time for some constitutional education for the people of New York.
And just as a closer, Barry, there's another good reason to deport Piers Morgan. He wants to add a gay marriage amendment to the Bible.
Really? Chuck, the numbers are now 79,236 who have signed the petition at We the People at whitehouse.gov, petitions.whitehouse.gov to deport British citizen Piers Morgan back
to Great Britain, who, by the way, doesn't want him back.
That's right. Several people have written editorials saying, please don't send him back. These are British citizens. So, Barry, I'm going to send you a copy of this article. It looks like we have a show for Monday.
Yes. Stick with us, ladies and gentlemen. There's much more to be plumbed in the depths of this one.
Join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies.